The current Congress and president came to power vowing to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, passed in 2010. So far, there's been no repeal and no replacement, but there have been moves to damage the existing law, which was intended to make sure all Americans are covered by health insurance. The maneuvers are paralleled by continued pressure from some groups for a true system of universal coverage. The League of Women Voters supports universal health care coverage, and the Rogue Valley chapter will feature a talk on the issue Thursday at 6:30 at the Higher Education Center in downtown Medford. Three guests help us wrap our arms around the issues at hand. Bill Walsh is the health care action coordinator for the League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley in the studio with me. Bill, good to have you.
Pleased to be here.
Lori Hoagland is here as well. She's a nurse practitioner at La Clinica in the Rogue Valley. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And Dr. Julian Bell is with us as well. He's a pulmonologist at Providence Health System based in Medford. Thanks for joining us again, Dr. Bell.
Thank you.
So, Bill, start us off. Bill Walsh, League of Women Voters in the Rogue Valley dedicates a person to just this issue?
It's kind of the issue. When it gets big enough, someone steps forward and says, I'll take the lead on that. So healthcare has been a league issue at the national, state, and local level since the early 90s. We've got a study, a position, and when the league takes a position on an issue, then we're encouraged to advocate for that position. And the position, in brief, is supporting national health insurance and universal health care.
Is this a single-payer national health insurance?
Not specifically, because we have supported all sorts of ways to include more people with health insurance. But at one point, the league was a member of a national single-payer coalition. Isn't at the moment, but single-payer would fit the bill, as well as anything else that helps more people get their health care.
So did the league feel like Obamacare came close at least, or was this sort of like waiting for the next train?
The league supported Obamacare in its passage and testified numerous times. So, yes, they supported that. They opposed the repeal that you've talked about, and we really do want to keep moving that direction. And when we get there, we'll know it, but we're not there yet.
So let's talk about practical uses of the law as it is right now at the clinical level, which would bring in Lori Hoagland and Julian Bell. So Lori Hoagland, La Clinica began as a place that serves lower-income patients. Has the mission changed over time?
I would say the mission remains. We still see patients without health insurance or coverage, undocumented patients, also people, sometimes visitors from other countries or states, and we continue to operate on a sliding scale system. We do, because of the Affordable Care Act, we have the ability to sign people up very quickly, and we do as much as possible so that they can benefit from coverage, and that would mostly be the OHP, Oregon Health Plan.
Okay, so the state's version of Medicaid. And so how active is La Clinica in outside of the clinical stuff, helping people just sign up to make sure that they are covered?
We do a very good job. We have people in our clinics to sit down with patients and do it on the spot. I work on the mobile health clinic that goes to the Set Free Church and to the mission, and we have a person there that can sign people up on the spot.
Just in terms of traffic at the clinic, has it changed at all since the Affordable Care Act came in? I mean, are you seeing more people?
We definitely have expanded services. We've opened a couple more clinics. We have school-based programs that have increased. So it has definitely helped us to see more Oregon residents.
All right. So is there a sense of there are more people out there who you see them anyway, but just not, they're not covered by insurance?
Well, they're more inclined to come in and get preventative health care because they don't have to be so fearful of the cost. They have the coverage for more things.
So let's turn to Dr. Julian Bell, a pulmonologist at Providence Health System. You did run for governor in the Democratic primary.
That's right.
So was this one of your issues?
At the time, my main issue was climate change. You know, I think there's a long list of rational policy ideas that are out there, and this is and health, making healthcare available for everybody is certainly one of them. But I also am very concerned about climate change, and that's high on my list of priorities. But this wasn't at that time one of the main things that I was working on.
Okay, but that it sounds like it's always a concern. I mean, it's something you've had to be aware of your whole time as a training for medical business and working in it.
Right, and I grew up in Australia, and at that time they had universal health care in Australia, and they still do have a version of the same thing that I grew up with. And so it has always been sort of my my understanding that people should, by right of just being a resident of the country, that should have access to health care. And, I think it comes as a surprise to a lot of people that it is not, that healthcare is not readily accessible to many people in the United States. I mean, there's sort of this common perception that everybody can get healthcare if they really need it. Well, they can, but for some people, they have to be dying. And they also have to be willing to face bankruptcy as a part of that. So, I mean, it is at a very basic level technically accessible, but it is not readily accessible in a way that's meaningful and realistic for many people. And so I think that that's a problem. And, you know, many people obviously do. And I think if people were aware of how much of a problem it is for a lot of Oregonians or Americans, they would also find it to be an unacceptable system.
So you do see healthcare as a right?
I certainly see it as a right. I mean, this is a modern, Western, affluent democracy. What is the government for other than for taking care of its citizens or for the people that live in the country? So, yes, I certainly see it as a right.
Same thing for Lori Hoagland and Bill Walsh, a right?
Yes, a right.
It is, and that's one of the questions the League is going to put on the table at the presentation tomorrow night is health care a right or a commodity? So it takes a while to answer that.
All right, let me invite our listeners to join the conversation on the exchange. There are lots of people with lots of feelings about this, generally fairly strong ones we find. So let's talk about universal health care and whether it is a right or whether it is a privilege or something else, some other noun that should apply to health care. Join us on the exchange as we talk to Bill Walsh, Lori Hoagland, and Julian Bell, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Bernie Sanders certainly helped increase in visibility of this issue of late when he called for a single-payer system, which is also universal health care coverage. Let's pull those apart, though, because universal is not necessarily single-payer. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, so universal healthcare means healthcare that's accessible to everybody. Single payer means that there's only one source of payment. There are different models around the Western countries of the world, Germany, England, France, various different places where there is either one single payer or perhaps multiple different private enterprise payers, but all the money has to go through a single system. And one other thing that's also maybe a bit confusing is that we say universal healthcare, and we think that it's a right, but that sort of makes it sound a bit like an entitlement, which people often find a bit uncomfortable. But really, the principle of universal healthcare is that if you had a single system that covered everybody, the total cost of all of that would be less for all individual citizens. And so another way of saying this whole thing is it's a huge tax break for middle-income Americans who are paying healthcare costs. This would cost you less.
Is there a belief, Lori Hoagland, that the cost would come down because people would be in better shape, because they would seek out the preventive care you talked about a little bit ago?
Well, I think the cost would go down for that reason, in addition to the fact that the insurance model, as we know it in this country, which oftentimes has its first priority to be a for-profit shareholder commitment, often serves the role of withholding care in the interest of saving money as opposed to providing care. So I think that with that healthcare as a commodity line of thinking, it makes it very difficult for people. They may have health coverage, but they are in the category of underinsured, which means that they don't always feel that they can afford to go in to pay the extra parts that they will have to pay either with co-pays or with the medication costs. So I do think that it would save money because people would be seeking care as a regular part of life in addition to being a model that would be less expensive to operate.
So beyond the insurance side, though, I mean, aren't there some incentives within medicine itself, Julian Bell, to go ahead and make sure that people do get more comprehensive care rather than just the maintenance? Because the higher the procedures that they'll have to get if they get sicker are going to cost more.
Well, the private insurance industry doesn't have a whole lot of incentive to pay for preventative care. because people turn over their health insurance reasonably frequently. For example, I think the average is somewhere in the order of about 3 years. And so the benefits of a preventative healthcare program are realized beyond the three-year horizon. And so most private insurers aren't seeing the financial benefit of investing in preventative care. So they don't have a big incentive to do it. I mean, I think that out of the sort of general principles of trying to take care of people, they do, but I don't think that it's an emphasis that they make. Whereas in a single-payer healthcare system, I mean, if there was one payer, for example, the government, that single source of revenue would have a tremendous incentive, especially if it covered people for their entire lives, to prevent them getting sick. And so that is certainly that's a big incentive for the single-payer system, but it is not generally an incentive for the private insurance system.
Julian Bell and Laurie Hoagland will be part of a panel tomorrow night talking about universal coverage. How do we get there? Put on by the League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Higher Education Center in Medford. There's a film that precedes the discussion. Bill Walsh is here from the League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley. You can join our conversation about universal coverage. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Is the program coming together because it just feels like the time is right to have this discussion, Bill Walsh?
It is. The healthcare is in the news every day and under attack, as you pointed out. But so far, and just the news today from Maine, the citizens there voted to do the Medicaid expansion.
It's the first state to actually have the citizens vote for Medicaid expansion. Yeah. It has the governor apoplectic, Paula Page.
Well, Oregon took that step some time ago, and happily, but there are going to be attacks against the health system. There's going to be a special election in January to rescind some funding. That's a separate issue that we can get into later. But the health care is really pretty mixed up. And I think the thing that we didn't mention thus far is how much money we spend compared to other countries that Julian mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We're twice as expensive, and we don't cover everybody. They're just that equation doesn't work.
So higher price and the outcomes are not quite as good as in other countries.
Yeah, we're down on the scale of infant mortality and other indicators, length of lifespan.
So Julian Bell, having had that experience growing up in Australia, the system there, I understand, is not quite like the system in Canada and the United Kingdom, but maybe somewhere between that and what we have here.
Well, it's become a little bit more privatized, and they've expanded maybe their supplemental insurance, but they still have a basic insurance system that covers all essential procedures for fixed prices. They have, anybody can walk into any doctor anywhere in the country and receive care. There's no out-of-network physicians. There are no they have a pharmaceutical list that they use, and there's various other cost control measures. But yeah, they have universal access to healthcare for basic basic elements of healthcare.
So there's a basic level, and you can pay a little more if you want a little more.
Yeah, exactly. And there's two principles, I think, that one of them that Bill touched on, which is that the idea that I think most people don't realize that we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world. Any other healthcare system is less expensive than our system. So when a lot of people say, well, how is this possibly going to save us money? We're providing more care for more people. Every other country that we talk about provides more care for more people and does it for less money. We have the most expensive system. We could pick anybody else's system, and it would be less expensive, any Western, modern Western democracy anyway.
As any of you watched Congress pass the Affordable Care Act 7.5 years ago, did you think we'd be having this discussion today? Laurie Hoagland?
Well, I would say I was at Washington, D.C. during part of the time when Max Baucus was having the discussions for the Affordable Care Act.
And wrote a lot of it with the Senate Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the time, they wouldn't allow a single-payer voice. So I expected that down the road, we would be confronting problems because we wouldn't be serving everyone, and we wouldn't necessarily be controlling costs as well as we needed to. So I guess I'd have to say I'm not really surprised by it.
But I guess the general question then for all of you is, do you think that we might have been past this level of discussion by this point? It seems like it hasn't moved terribly far, really, over the course of most of a decade. Bill Walsh?
It takes time. I guess the President Obama indicated that. And now we're having kind of a blowback, but I do think that the more and more people are lining up behind Medicare for all or single payer, trying to put better ideas on the table and try to make them happen.
Is this session that you're holding with the League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley tomorrow, is this timed in part to coincide with the Obamacare sign-up period?
It isn't. It's just a coincidence, but we'll mention that, too, that it is time to sign up.
For people who are getting insurance through the marketplaces, and you mentioned, Lori Hoagland, that you help people do that at La Clinica. What kinds of things are they finding out there in the way of options versus what has been available in previous years?
Well, I think surprisingly, we're not that impacted by the political wind. I mean, we focus in on you're here today, you have a problem, let's get you signed up. And we really hold people's hands through the process of collecting all of the essential documents, which can be very complicated when you're talking about homeless individuals who may or may not even have their birth certificates available, et cetera. But I would say one of the challenges is with the federal government looking at the dollars to states is the worry that some of the people who currently have Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid in Oregon may not qualify. And I've had patients in mid-year who had a very good health coverage. They had a change in their income, sometimes very minimal change, which has made them no longer eligible, and then they lose their coverage at a time when their health may be very fragile.
Okay. Much more to talk about down the road, certainly, and as Bill Walsh mentioned, there is the Medicaid tax vote coming up in January, so we'll be talking about that as we get closer to the end of the year. The session tomorrow night is called Universal Coverage. How do we get there? It starts with a film called We Can Fix It from the Physicians for a National Health Program. It'll then feature the conversation with two of the guests here at the studio today, Julian Bell, pulmonologist at Providence Health System, Lori Hoagland, nurse practitioner at La Clinica. League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley puts all this on. Bill Walsh is the healthcare action coordinator there and has set all this up. Bill, thanks for coming in today.
Pleasure.
Lori, thank you.
Thank you.
Julian, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.